From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. I want to begin with a programming note today. We were going to talk about the labor disputes affecting three public universities in Illinois. The faculty at Chicago State and Eastern Illinois Universities are on strike, and faculty at Governor's State University could join them as soon as tomorrow. We are still planning to bring you that conversation, but not likely until next week. For now, as you know, Illinois was hit hard on Friday by a wave of tornadoes that left a trail of death and damage across the state.
Catastrophic tornadoes tearing through the Midwest and the South. At least six people were killed.
One person is dead, dozens injured after a roof of a theater collapsed during last night's storm.
Getting, you know, 20 to 25 tornadoes, I guess the official count will come out later this year, even on the last day of March is really extreme.
So I guess we're in Tornado Alley, kind of like Oklahoma.
The timing of these tornadoes was not particularly unusual. According to the National Weather Service, nearly 80% of all tornadoes occur from the start of April through the end of June during the late afternoon and early evening hours, though experts say tornadoes can form any time. What was more unusual was the scope of the storms. On Friday, they hit as far north as McChesney Park in Winnebago County and as far south as Salem in Marion County. There were more that hit on Tuesday night in Fulton County. It's still not entirely clear what effect climate change is having on tornadoes, but research published in January in the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society found Illinois could see more days in the future with the type of weather conditions that could lead to supercells, the intense thunderstorms that tend to be the most prominent cause of damaging hail and deadly tornadoes. That could have a dramatic effect on Illinois communities in the years and decades to come. Joining us now to talk more about this is Victor Gensini, one of the authors of that report. He's a professor of meteorology at Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, and he joins us now. Professor Gensini, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
We're also joined by Andrew Pritchard. He's a meteorologist for Illinois Public Media, our home station, and a storm chaser and photographer. Andrew, thank you for being with us today as well.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, as ever, you are welcome to join the conversation today at 800-222-9455. We want to know, have you seen more tornadoes in your part of Illinois? And what effect did last week's weather have on where you are living? 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Professor Gensini, I want to begin with you, and maybe we can just start with the basics. What actually is a tornado? How does it form?
Yeah, sure. The sort of definition, scientific definition, if you will, is basically a rapidly rotating column of air that extends down from what we call a cumulonimbus cloud or a thunderstorm cloud. These towering updrafts that we see in the spring and the summer that look like cauliflower in the sky off in the distance. And violently rotating column of air, in order to be termed a tornado, must be in contact with the ground. Otherwise, it's a funnel cloud. And across the United States, we get about 1,200, 1,300 of these rapidly rotating columns of air. And they produce various amounts of damage, which is recorded by the Fujita scale. And now we have what's called the enhanced Fujita scale, sort of some scientific upgrades to that, but these tornadoes do damage, and then we rank them anywhere from EF0 to EF5.
EF0 to EF5, yeah. So what makes an environment more conducive to the sort of weather that leads to tornadoes? Is it a particular set of conditions?
Yeah, great question. It kind of goes back to, we really focus on the ingredients, and very similar to baking chocolate chip cookies or an apple pie, you need a certain set of ingredients. And for severe storms, the fundamental ingredients, the acronym is SLIM, shear lift, instability, and moisture. And if you have those four ingredients, there's at least going to be potential for severe storms and tornadoes to occur. But really, I think the fundamental ingredient that sets apart, you know, a general thunderstorm day versus a tornado day is really the wind shear component. So if you think of a flagpole that extends from the surface of the earth all the way up to the upper atmosphere, we would like to see, if you want to create a tornado, winds at the bottom of that flagpole near the surface of the earth as you ascend on that flagpole, changing wind speed, but also changing direction. And that really allows for the thunderstorm to organize and then potentially begin to rotate and then, you know, perhaps produce tornadoes. It's a very Goldilocks process, and many storms have rotation, but do not produce tornadoes. And it's still one of the great scientific endeavors in terms of research to pin down these fundamental ingredients.
Interesting. So winds moving in one direction in the lower part of the atmosphere, moving in another direction a little bit higher up. And that's what gives us that sort of rotation is what I'm
saying. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
All right. Andrew Pritchard, I want to bring you into the conversation. Now, these factors we've just heard Professor Gensini talking about, were they at play last Friday and on Tuesday this past week?
They absolutely were. And they were kind of on display days in advance of these storm systems as well. So that gave us the opportunity to be looking at this, you know, 3, 4, 5 days before the actual storm system made its way into the Midwest and say, hey, we've got all of these ingredients that Victor just listed. We need to watch this storm system. Then as it gets a little bit closer, we're able to kind of refine those forecasts and kind of hone in on a geographic region that is going to be especially vulnerable to those storms. And we saw that come together in kind of different fashions, but, you know, at the same way on Friday and Tuesday of the past week.
How are you able to, I mean, what goes into forecasting a tornado? How are you able to tell days out that this kind of weather is a strong possibility?
You have to really zoom out when you're looking at it days out. You know, you're looking 5 to 6 days out. This time of year when we get these bigger storm systems, it's a little easier to do that. Again, you can see this big storm system, this mid-latitude cyclone coming into the Midwest. Again, we can kind of see where those ingredients are going to be, broadly speaking. But what really comes down to kind of the difference between getting these severe storms, maybe getting supercell thunderstorms, those rotating storms that Victor mentioned there, and then flipping the switch to not just having severe storms, but storms that are going to produce tornadoes. That really comes down to some of the finer scale details that we can't model 5 or 6 days into the future. So to kind of, you know, start out 5 days out, you're looking at a broad geographic region that's maybe going to be favorable or have those ingredients in place. And then when you get a little closer, maybe 2 to 3 days out, you start to really see some of the failure modes. And you're looking for that as a meteorologist. You're not always saying, hey, we've got the ingredients. Well, what could maybe prevent this from being a larger event? And, you know, maybe you start to see some of those, or maybe within a couple of days, you're not seeing the failure modes. And that's what was happening on Friday. And we saw some failure modes potentially with this last one on Tuesday. It was a little less widespread, a little fewer on the tornadoes there. But that's when you start to see some of the smaller, finer scale details. And then the day of, that's when you can really see, you know, where are we going to get the sunshine that's going to heat up the atmosphere? Where might we have a little boundary that was left by storms the night before, and start to pick up on, you know, how high is that tornado potential? And then also, where is that going to be focused?
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the big picture of tornadoes and extreme weather and the potential that we are going to be seeing more tornadoes, perhaps a longer tornado season, perhaps the tornado season shifting from the plain states, as many of us sort of conceptually think of where the most tornadoes hit in the United States are, more to the Midwest, shifting east and more into Illinois. We are talking about this with Victor Gensini, who is the author of a recent report on this topic from the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society, one of the authors of that report. He's also a professor of meteorology at Northern Illinois University in DeKalb. We're also speaking with Andrew Pritchard, a meteorologist for Illinois Public Media, as well as a storm chaser and photographer. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. 800-222-9455. So, Victor Gensini, let's go bigger picture now. This is a field where there's still obviously a lot to learn, but what generally do we know about the effect of Illinois' changing climate on tornadoes? What we see, how much we'll see of them, and so on?
Yeah, it's pretty difficult with perils and hazards the smaller scale you get. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, tornadoes and hailstorms and thunderstorms in general are very small when you look at other hazards like hurricanes, heat waves, drought. And the smaller those hazards are, really the more difficult they are to attribute directly to climate change. But if you go back to the changes in the fundamental ingredients that produce these storms, we expect that as we go into the next 50, 100 years, the number of days we have one of those ingredients, instability, will very likely continue to increase, has been increasing, and will continue to increase into the future. That is really what we, you know, for example, Andrew was talking about the ingredients favorable on Tuesday. Instability was a big component of that. You have that warm, humid air at the surface, and that air basically wants to rise like a hot air balloon. And in the future, we think we'll have more days with instability that at least will support thunderstorms. The other key component, though, is that wind shear that we were talking about, the flagpole example. And a lot of the climate models, especially in the summertime, have less vertical wind shear. So it's kind of this battle between instability and vertical wind shear. But if you look at the days with wind shear that have instability, that actually increases. And so we think in the overall aggregate, we'll have more days in the future supportive of severe weather, especially on the tails or what we call the shoulders of the seasons. More days earlier on, more days in the later half of the season, and actually fewer days in kind of the middle, the July and the August, where there's just not enough wind shear present. And that's generally true for a majority of the country when we look at those fundamental ingredients.
That's interesting. What about, I'm thinking back, it seems like we've had a fair number of December or January tornadoes in recent years too. I don't know if that's just sort of a recency bias on my part, or is the, you know, the season getting that much longer, or what is that? How does that factor into what you're talking about?
Yeah, we've heard, certainly had some remarkable December events lately. In fact, January and February of this year were way above average in terms of tornado counts. We're sitting here on April 6th with roughly almost 500 tornadoes reported preliminarily through today's date, and we should be only at about 250. So we've had a pretty, I would say, anomalous cool tornado season, right? We're really not even into the peak of severe weather season, certainly not for Illinois, which is usually late May into the first week in June. But then you even go back to, you know, December's, you think of the Mayfield Kentuckys, the derechos that we've had in December, which have been pretty impressive. And those are all pretty consistent with the fingerprint of a warming climate, especially in the tails of the seasons. And one other thing that I'll mention regarding, you know, changes in impacts of climate, in addition to the overall mean increase, a lot of our climate models show additional variability or kind of an increase in what we call the standard deviation in the number of days per year. So that really argues for some years that will be incredibly active in the future, but other years actually that will be very tame and very, very quiet. And sort of you have this widening of the distribution, which really equates to just more volatility in tornado season with kind of, you basically get average numbers of tornadoes less often.
Interesting. So some years will be better. Some years could be much worse, potentially. Andrew, you've made this point in the past that climate change does not directly cause extreme events, but a changing climate means the ingredients for extreme events will be in place with more frequency. And I think we've been hearing Victor talk about that. Can you elaborate on that idea?
Sure. And you know, the December tornado outbreaks, the Mayfield, Kentucky event, you know, that's a good example where, you know, sometimes we might get caught up in saying that the Mayfield, Kentucky tornado or that tornado outbreak, that happened because climate change. And that's kind of an empty statement. And what we're really trying to say here is, as, you know, you and Victor were just kind of discussing, maybe having more days where we've got that the ingredients present, and then especially that instability component of it. You know, was climate change the reason that we had, you know, a warm and unstable warm sector with that storm system that then was able to take advantage of all the wind shear and create an outbreak of supercells and tornadoes? Again, we can't say that, you know, climate change is the reason there, but, you know, we can start to look at some of the data that Victor has uncovered here and say that we may have this potential more often. Again, the expansion of the season, but, you know, the variability, that's a really important component of that, because we're talking about a really quick start to the severe weather season here in Illinois. And, you know, it's a big conversation topic. And we're coming off the heels of one of the quietest years on record. So 2022, a very quiet severe weather season here across central Illinois, and especially during that peak season where in May and June, you know, we're watching the soil dry up here in central Illinois because we didn't have those thunderstorms that we typically would that time of year. So, you know, the last couple of years have maybe been a great example of this, where, yes, we're talking a lot about some of these violent storms and at times during kind of atypical times of years, but we've also kind of experienced that that void in the severe weather as well. When we get into one of these patterns where we just don't have the jet stream support, we don't have that wind shear, and we're not bringing highly impactful storm systems into the middle part of the country.
All right, we're going to take a break on the program. When we come back, more with Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist for WILL, Illinois Public Media, and Victor Gensini, professor of meteorology at Northern Illinois University. We're talking about the potential for an increased threat from tornadoes as our planet continues to warm. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. Asa, well, we see you online for there. Stay on the line. We'll get to your call as soon as we come back from this break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way, because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the possibility of a growing threat from tornadoes. The season seems to be getting longer. There's a potential that Tornado Alley is moving away from the Plain States more toward the Midwest. We're talking about this with the author, one of the co-authors of a recent report on that subject, professor of meteorology, Victor Gensini from Northern Illinois University in DeKalb. Also, Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist for Illinois Public Media and WILL, our home station. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. What do you think climate change will mean for Illinois weather in the years ahead? 800-222-9455. How are you preparing for that possibility? Again, let us know at 800-222-9455. And let's go now to line four. Asa is calling in from Niantic. Asa, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you? I understand that you are on a response team. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm on one of the UMCOR, which is a religious response team out of the Methodist Church. But there is a great need in our area for emergency response teams. When these storms come through, a lot of times we're depending on our local villages and things to help us out. And what happens is in small towns like Niantic, we don't have that kind of support to be able to come in after there is, you know, some major devastation in an area. So the emergency response teams are so important. We get called on short notice to show up. We've been trained to tarp and cut trees and do a variety of things to help get communities back on their feet, at least to get important services in and to get things in that can help those individuals. And we go in and work any time from them, you know, a day or so after the storm up to 3 to 5 years after cleaning up that process. And people tend to forget those communities that have been hit, that it takes that long to recoup from these massive storms that are coming through.
Yeah, it does seem to fade out of the news after a while. Asa, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate the call. And thanks for being on the response team. Andrew, is this something that, I mean, do you see a greater need for response teams like this as we are potentially getting more events like this, or more instability or unpredictability of events like this, maybe?
Absolutely. And it gives me an opportunity to talk about something I'm excited about that I'm involved in professionally. You know, you've introduced me here as the meteorologist for Illinois Public Media. I'm also employed full time by Nutrien Ag Solutions, which is a global ag retail company. And so we've got these ag retail facilities spread out across the Midwest, across the Great Plains, that are all vulnerable to these big severe storms. So myself, as the meteorologist who, you know, specializes in severe weather and weather safety, I've teamed up with a group from Nutrien, the company's safety, health, and environment team, and we just went out to South Carolina, to Georgia, to go through FEMA's community emergency response training. And the purpose of doing that is to sort of position ourselves to be able to respond after we have these big storms, to either get in if our facility has been hit, Or maybe it was a community where a lot of our employees live, or maybe their family members are living. And we had this occur on March 24th down with the tornadoes in Mississippi. We had several employees whose homes were destroyed by the tornadoes. In Iowa, we had a near miss just this past Friday, March 31st. And so being a large company with a lot of employees and a lot of resources, we're trying to kind of take on some of that responsibility and, you know, do it the right way, go through FEMA and learn how to properly respond after these disasters. But I think it's something that, you know, it would be great if this could expand to, you know, maybe other companies like this and communities. You mentioned, you know, your church and other organizations like this that, you know, can simply go through, I hate to say simply because it can be intense training, but maybe just some basic emergency response training to kind of learn the essentials here on some of that initial response and be able to pitch in on a community level. Because, you know, many things can happen. There can be, you know, delays or obstructions for emergency crews getting into some of these communities. If the damage is widespread, it may take a long time before emergency responders can respond in a formal manner. And then, as you said, a lot of people don't realize that it's not just a week-long cleanup after these storms. The repairs and, you know, getting back to a normal, quote-unquote, it takes months, it takes years. Whether it's a tornado or, you know, the Iowa and Illinois derecho we had in 2020, they're still recovering from that. So that's another way that the local community can really empower itself to be able to respond and take on some of those longer lasting repairs and cleanup operations that have to be done.
That's great. Let's get another caller in. Bob is calling from Springfield on line one. Bob, thank you for calling in.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
I understand you had a question, something you observed from a tornado in the 90s.
Yes, I was gotten off of work and I heard the sirens go off, so I turned on the radio to hear that a funnel cloud was forming west of the airport here in Springfield. So my curiosity got me the better of me, and I went up to look at it, and it just got bigger and then took off to the north, hit the ground and got wide, took off to the north, and so I was compelled to chase it. I noticed as it was I was then to the west of it, looking to the east, that it had formed like a twin set of a double tornado next to each other, and they were kind of dancing around as it moved. I was kind of wondering if that was typical, that we just don't see it, or was that more of a rare event?
All right. Thanks for the question, Bob. I appreciate that. Victor Gensini, how typical is what we heard Bob describing there?
Yeah, great question, Bob. And that's a really neat observation. It's actually pretty common. These supercell types of storms have something that is called a mesocyclone. It's an area of low pressure in the storm that is rotating. And oftentimes those mesocyclones will cycle and what we call occlude, and produce a new low-level mesocyclone that can often have either two cyclonic tornadoes. Those would be two tornadoes at the same time that would be rotating counterclockwise. Or actually what's even more common is where you have the mesocyclone sort of producing a tornado, and then the anticyclonic area of the rear flank downdraft producing a much weaker, but usually very visible anticyclonic tornado, which would be one that is rotating clockwise. Doesn't happen with all supercells. I don't think we're scientifically 100% sure, you know, what type of atmospheric environments favor, you know, two tornadoes occurring at the same time. But many supercells that produce tornadoes do have what we call satellite tornadoes.
So let me, in the time we have remaining, I want to talk about some of the potential effects we might see out of an increased tornado season, perhaps a longer one or just a more unpredictable one. Professor Gensini, looking at this maybe less from the standpoint of economic damage, which can be significant, but the effect this could have on people, the locations of these tornadoes are changing. What does that mean for the potential of tornadoes to hit densely populated areas, cities maybe? Could that make them more deadly?
Well, look, it only takes one tornado. I don't really care what the calendar says. I don't care what state you live in. The atmosphere doesn't care what the calendar says or what state you live in. You could be in a year like last year, which, you know, statistically was a very dismal year for tornadoes and the frequency of those tornadoes. And yet, if you take one violent tornado and, you know, take that tornado or violent supercell through a populated city, the result is billions of dollars in damage and loss, and also potentially casualties and even fatalities. And again, all it takes is one. And that goes back to, I think, our, you know, earlier caller asking about emergency preparedness. I think that is a really important component here of, as we move into the peak of storm season, what is your severe weather plan? Does your business have a severe weather plan? Are you in a hospital? What's your severe weather plan? Are you in a school? What type of building are you traditionally in the late afternoon and evening hours? Do you have a plan if you're on the road? How do you receive weather information? We know that these tornadoes occur. And again, as the frequency of those begins to increase more and more in places like Illinois or Tennessee or Arkansas or Missouri, a little bit further east than kind of the traditional high frequency areas, of course, we have more people at risk. Right. There's a greater population density as you move east of the Mississippi River. And that is helping and contributing, you know, one of the major contributors to this increase in the number of tornado disasters that we've been seeing.
Do we need to rethink our sort of both at like a city urban design level as well as like individual construction standards? Like if you build a house in Florida in certain areas, it has to be, it's supposed to be concrete and reinforced, you know, with rebar in the walls and the roof is banded down. I mean, do people in Illinois need to start thinking about these adaptations to a potentially changing reality here?
They do, but the reality is most don't. And building codes are extremely difficult because they're set at the local level. There is no federal mandate in terms of building a house to spec. And I think the bigger challenge is actually holding people accountable to those building codes and ensuring that they're being followed. That is a major issue. But I think you look at, you know, high fatality events like the Mayfield Candle Factory or perhaps the Amazon warehouse in Southern Illinois that was hit last December, a couple of Decembers ago. You know, you begin to ask the question of these larger kind of structures of what is the precautionary measure or the action that we're going to take, and where are we going to put people in terms of keeping them out of harm's way when these types of severe weather events hit? I think there's some very simple things that can be done for large businesses. And there's actually success stories out there, including, you know, for example, the F4 tornado that went through Roanoke, Illinois in 2004 in July. There were no fatalities or injuries from that event because there was a safe room for people inside of that manufacturing plant. So there's plenty of success stories out there and examples that businesses and, you know, commercial entities can take advantage of, but they just have to, they have to have that, you know, desire and knowledge to want to be able to protect those people that are working in those types of structures.
Andrew Pritchard, in your line of work, I imagine you talk to a lot of farmers who are seeing the effects of climate change firsthand. Not only this potential rise in more extreme weather events, but extreme heat days are also forecast to go up, particularly in west central Illinois. But I imagine that climate change gets talked about in different terms than we are using on this program. And there may be even people who don't want to acknowledge it for maybe political reasons. How does that conversation go when you're talking about these issues with maybe people who don't want to hear it?
That's a wonderful point. And you're right. We experience, you know, climate change and this evolving weather here in the Midwest in a very a variety of different ways. You mentioned, you know, the severe elements of it, the heat. What we're also running into here with agriculture locally is the idea of these shrinking windows for planting and for harvesting in the spring and in the fall. And that's a result of not only seeing more precipitation annually, but seeing more of these frequent heavy rain events. 2019 was a really good example of that, where in the Midwest, it was extremely active. The jet stream continued to send storm systems through the Midwest. And so it was tough to find even, you know, two dry days in a row where farmers can get some of this heavy machinery out into the fields. And we can see the same thing happen in the fall when we're trying to get towards harvest season. We just came out of a very favorable one. It was sunny and 75 degrees almost all of September and October, it seemed like. But we can run into these very rainy problems in the fall as well. And then when you look up toward the toward the Dakotas, head up north toward the Canadian border, and you talk about, you know, how do you talk about climate change? How do we kind of frame this, you know, in a way that's conversational that, you know, maybe people might be comfortable talking about? But, you know, when we talk about farmers, they know the story of the weather better than anyone else. I mean, I almost feel intimidated coming and speaking to some of these groups of farmers about the weather in their own backyards because they already know the story. But you kind of talk to them about, you know, hey, we're in North Dakota. You're planting more corn and soybeans than you have, you know, ever before. If you look at the last, you know, 70, 80 years of agriculture across the U.S., and that's simply a product of, you know, we're having that last frost in the winter come a little bit earlier. We're seeing that first frost in the fall come a little later. The growing season is it's expanding. And so we've got these the ability to grow different crops in different regions. And, you know, just having anecdotal conversations with some of the growers across the region, too, they'll tell you and offer up, sometimes candidly, not everyone wants to talk about it in front of the whole group, but they're noticing, you know, hey, we used to be able to do this on our farm. We used to be able to do that. Now we have to do X, Y, Z, you know, insert whatever sort of weather impact you want. They're seeing the changes. They're having to kind of plan their operations around those. And at times it's preventing a crop from even being planted, as we saw in a lot of areas in 2019, where not only was it delayed, but they simply couldn't plant a crop because it would not stop raining during the spring. So you're right, there's a lot of different ways here. It's not always the headline grabber, the tornado last night or anything like that. Sometimes it's just, it won't stop raining, so we can't plant a crop.
Victor Gensini, only about a minute and a half left in our conversation today. I do like to leave people with hope, if we can, when we are talking about some of these big picture problems. If somebody says to you, what can I do about this? What would you say to them?
Yeah, in terms of, you know, climate change, I mean, you really all need to look introspectively and understand what our carbon footprint is. I mean, that's really number one. Typically, you know, the largest contributors for any one individual are things like driving or flying. And so thinking about alternative means of transportation is really, really important. I mean, me individually, I'm in line to purchase an electric vehicle. I have solar panels on my house. I'm trying to do everything that I can to remove my carbon footprint. And it's going to take a lot of people, you know, not only making investments in terms of not individual people, but also governments, federal agencies making investments to try to put a ding in this. And the biggest challenge, right, is that this is just not a problem of one individual government. I mean, it's an issue that all of us worldwide, all humans are going to have to address, because this is certainly not just a problem for the U.S. It is a global issue. And so targeting, you know, I think the other thing, too, is don't forget about the ballot box. I mean, supporting candidates that understand climate change and promote, and it's at the top of their agenda in terms of address some of these global issues. You know, I don't want to talk about climate doomsday and the climate crisis. I mean, that's sort of silly. It's sensationalizing the issue. Fundamental thing that climate change is doing to hazards is really just altering the probability of seeing one of these events. And so we need not talk about it in sort of a doomsday way. We really need to look at it in terms of hope and look at it as a challenge and something that we all, you know, ought to address through engineering and also making decisions that, you know, support removing carbon from the atmosphere as much as we possibly can.
Victor Gensini, professor of meteorology at Northern Illinois University. Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist for WILL Illinois Public Media. Thank you both so much for being with us today on the 21st show to talk about this. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.